Jagd und Hund, the podcast with Vicky
and Carsten. Variety, passion and practical knowledge.
Meet exciting guests. A warmly welcome to our first podcast special in English.
Hello from my side as well.
We are thrilled to have the European Bow Hunting Federation, short EBF, as our guest. In this episode, we'll explore the rich heritage and modern advancements in bow hunting, guided by the expertise of the EBF. Whether you're an experienced bow hunter or just curious about this ancient art, this conversation with the EBF promises to be insightful and inspiring.
And of course, we have also invited two guests to this special. Anders Geier is the president of the EBF and has been hunting since childhood. He has hunted extensively across Europe, North America, New Zealand and Africa, primarily with bow. As the founding president of the European Bow Hunting Federation, he is a master instructor and regional coordinator for the International Bow Hunter Education Program in Europe. Three of his four children are hunters, with two following his passion of bow hunting.
Hi, warmly welcome to you, Anders.
Thank you very much. That was kind of shocking to hear that.
And of course, we do have a second guest, and our second guest is Oliver Opitz. He is vice president of the German Bow Hunting Association and EBF coordinator within CIC International. He leads the global product portfolio for military weather protection clothing at a company in Newark, Delaware. A hunter for 34 years with 14 years of bow hunting experience, he co-manages a big game hunting area in Tyrol and has hunted across Europe, Asia and Africa. He advocates for legal equality between rifle and bow hunting in Germany. Hi, warmly welcome to you as well.
Thank you for having me here.
Yes, thank you very much.
So, great guys. Let's start with our first question. How did you get into hunting, Anders?
How could I not get into hunting? That's probably a proper answer. How did I get into hunting with bow and arrow? I think I built my first bow when I was 3 years old or something, and then I've been shooting bow ever since. And somewhere there when you were 11, 12, you realized, this is very possible to hunt with.
Yeah.
And from there it went, you know. And then the problem was really the rifles, because you had to become 18 to acquire a rifle license.
So it was easier for you.
So there was a possibility there.
Okay, very good, very good. What about you?
My outdoor life started with fishing. When I was really young, done a lot then in Norway with my father. Then my mother opened a fishing store, so I was like a best salesman at the age of 12.
Wow.
And then it started from there. And with 20, I did my hunting exam with my father together. So there was no hunting history in my family.
Okay.
But we changed it within that one generation. So meanwhile, my brother hunts, my father hunts. We're all over the place. Wherever you can go, we do a lot of trips together. So
very good.
Hunting is the center in everything here.
That's nice. And as we always start with our three questions, you already answered our second question on this, but please do me a favor and give us another shot. How did you get into bow hunting?
That was easy, as I mentioned. No, but I did start somewhere around 11, 12 to do competitive archery. Okay. And I think my first hunting trip was to Finland, actually, for mallards. And I was maybe 14.
Wow.
So that I have a long, long descendant on our history in bow hunting.
Ollie, how about you? How did it start?
It started in the way that CIC meeting, somebody gave me a bow and said, please do something out of it. Mm. And the lady who gave it to her, she didn't want to hunt herself with the bow, but she saw that I was quite skilled in shooting that bow when we were training. And so I got my first bow, started bow shooting, and eventually said, I don't want to go to Africa again with the rifle. It's not what I want. I go with the bow the next time. So I prepared myself, and by 2010 I started, and then I got into bow hunting. And since then, I think I've never had the rifle anymore outside of Germany and Austria.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
That's cool.
So all my trips I've done since are with the bow. I check for where can I go with the bow.
Mm-hmm.
So it's lovely. I just enjoy it so much.
Okay, sounds interesting. So can you guys tell us about an unforgettable moment while bow hunting? Maybe we start with Ollie this time.
I always say I have a trophy wall in my brain or in my head, and this is all of the trophies I did not get. Mm-hmm. And I have one trophy, which is an eland. We talked about eland meat before. Yeah. And it was at the end of an evening. I was sitting on a termite mound, and 25 meters in front of me, an old eland bull, the one you dream about, the one, you know, with those worn down horns, comes up, sun sinks, red color. He comes up at 25 meters. I was not able to shoot.
Yeah.
I was just watching him, and he walked by, and that was my trophy.
Yeah.
Memorable moments.
That's my internal trophy wall. And some of them I remember more than the ones I actually shot.
Yeah. Mm.
So, yeah.
Sometimes it's always nice to watch.
Yeah. So any moment you want to tell us about, Anders?
Oh, that was a very, very hard question. I usually respond my next hunt. Yeah. It's going to be the best, the best moment. I was brought up hunting roe deers, roebucks. And if you put it another way, the question another way, what could you not, what was your last animal you want to hunt? Mm-hmm. So it was probably a roebuck. Big roebucks are incredible.
Yeah.
But it's also because you're brought up with them.
Wow, that's so interesting. And as we do have two skilled and full of knowledge bow hunters with us, we do have questions around history and development. So how has bow hunting evolved, and what role does the European Bow Hunting Federation play in shaping its future, Anders?
EBF is a really good source for information. We have a lot of knowledge in our in-house. And we also work this information in many, many ways, you know, spread the word. We try to spread the word. We also have some contacts within FACE, since we're in FACE is basically the European Hunting Association. For all the hunting associations in Europe are members of FACE. We deliver information related to the use of bow and arrow as a hunting tool.
Mm-hmm. Ollie, you would like to add on something?
Yeah, I think we talked about this today in our General Assembly. Bow hunting is ancient in terms of a weapon used for hunting, but quite often nowadays it's not really discussed within the normal hunting associations. So we like to support that and give that idea, and we care about that specific form because it's different.
Yeah.
And it helps that. And so talking about EBF, going into FACE and going into the countries, that's what we try to do to develop that. So we support specifically countries also like Germany, so that we give scientific data, so we can bring our cause forward, so make people understand why it actually works really well and can be a new addition.
So speaking about the countries, how do bow hunting regulations vary across countries? And what role does the EBF play in advocating the legal consistency, especially regarding animal welfare?
Oh, that's a tough one.
That was a long one.
I know.
The regulations worldwide are hugely widespread. I mean, it comes down to basically no regulations at all. It's just legal, and then it's very detailed in some nations like Denmark. Mm-hmm. On the animal welfare side, we are very, very clear with that it works very well within modern animal welfare principles. When you look at the latest studies from Denmark and also the Finnish, the fairly recent Finnish study that is not completely concluded, these are super clear that it's well within the norms of rifle hunting.
Yeah. Anything you want to add to that one?
I mean, when you look at the global picture, not all scientific information was available from day one.
Yeah.
So that's why you get quite a bit of a spread in what's legal and what is used or how it's described. And I think this is what we're trying to support now with all those scientific findings, that we give all that information back and spread it through our nation so they can use it. And when updates to the hunting law happen, they can use that as a basis. So we're getting closer together. Mm-hmm. But there's always traditions. And I think, you know, between Germany and Denmark, and we're all hunters, but they're all different in a way. Yeah. And we see the same with rifle hunting as well, the shooting tests you need to do and so on. It's the same thing. But we're trying to educate. I mean, this is our roles. Yeah. We can spread messages and support the local hunting associations with that.
Talking about messages, Anders, you already talked about the animal welfare. So does the EBF have any standards, and what standards does the EBF promote?
We basically, our standard, of course we do have standards, but the educational standard is what we prefer, you know, to relate to. Mm. And in those standards, we are using the International Bowhunter Education Program. Mm. And in that, we have ethics that actually govern shot placement and when timing the shot, you know, to understand when you should and where you should place the arrow and so on. It doesn't differ much from rifle hunting. The big difference is basically bow hunting is very time consuming. Mm. It takes a long time to harvest something. Mm. And then shot placement is what it is, you know.
Does this ensure also, like, the animal welfare itself?
I think shot placement is almost everything, you know.
Ollie, how about you?
I think what Anders said is really important. In the countries where bow hunting is not yet integrated, it comes down to education. Mm-hmm. When you think about Germany, that there's two big pieces. You have Weidgerechtigkeit as an undefined law, but then you also have the Tierschutzgesetz, so the animal welfare law about that. And those two things you need to bring together. And that's, again, scientific data we can provide. And at the second part, I mean, how do you become a hunter in Germany? Because you have this big theme about that you are allowed to take life. Mm. So you need to demonstrate that you're enabled. And enabling comes through education. Mm. And I think that's where we try to really bring it together. And that's what the EBF, together with the founding countries, has integrated into Europe. They brought the IBEP courses in. So we are schooling with the same system. You still can add local peculiarities, local specialities in when it's necessary. But there's one cohesive system from where then everything else comes from. Mm. And I think this is what the EBF is doing. And that's quite interesting because this is different to how hunting law for rifle hunting has established. It got, you know, that was localized.
Yeah.
But we brought something in basically from a European level into the countries.
Every country, yeah.
So let's stay with that educational and training aspect for a moment. So what role does the EBF play in the development of international training standards for bow hunters? And what does a solid program look like, in your opinion?
The whole EBF or the program, the IBEP program, what we have, comes from the United States.
Yeah.
And there it actually started because they learned that bow hunting wasn't perfectly exercised. So they started a program, which is unusual in the US because normally you don't have much of a hunting exam in the States.
Yeah.
But for bow hunting, it exists.
Okay.
And even that course today is mandatory for around 20 states. So you need to do the course also in the US before you can even become a bow hunter and exercise bow hunting in the States. So that's the basis. But then bringing this to Europe with a different hunting tradition. So what have we done, for instance, in Germany? We took that course. We're going to track that course so that everybody obtains that IBEP license as well, so they could hunt in those states in the United States as
Makes sense.
So we maintain that. But we add, for instance, a shooting test. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much in every country in Europe that there's a shooting test added. It looks slightly different, but it's very bow hunting relevant. So it talks about the equipment. It talks about your arrows. It talks about what blades you need to shoot. So there's quite a regulation behind that. And then you have to exercise this test as well. And I think that's what Europe adds to this whole thing.
What you have to remember all the time is that we are not educating beginners. Mm. We are educated hunters.
Mm. Yeah.
So this is basically an add-on. It's an advanced Jagdschein. if we say so.
Yeah, hunting license. Yeah, it is. Yeah. But I guess, I mean, it's quite difficult, isn't it? As there are different like schools where you can learn something from the hunting, even if the exams are kind of the same. How do you manage the level? Do you have kind of basics, what you're asking for in front of?
We don't start with basics. So if you, when you apply for a course or you're going to sign up, you're going to get all your training manuals. Mm-hmm. And with that, you can self-prepare first. And then there's a course with a test at the end. And the test is a theoretical test. That's pretty straightforward normally for somebody who already hunts. But there's some specialties around bow and arrow, our equipment, because it's different. But then the real difference becomes the shooting test. Because to shoot well with bow and arrow, you need to familiarize with the equipment. Mm. So if you don't prepare yourself for a couple of months, if you haven't shot a bow and arrow before, 3 to 6 months at least, and then you need to also show that your equipment works. So we want to really see you in action. So we don't want to have like just a 2-2-2. We want to be really having a proper arrow, which is really able to also be effective on a large wild boar, for instance. Yeah. And you need to show that over different distances, which are relevant within bow hunting. And that must work, and you need to demonstrate that. So that's an effort you need to take, otherwise you will not pass that shooting test. And I think this is nice because it means somebody was really passionate about it.
Yeah, and also, if I may add to that, Ollie, we actually do also test their anatomical knowledge, because the test is usually conducted on animal targets, life-size animal targets. So it's two things actually we test. It's the accuracy of the person. Three things actually is, and that they can actually tune a hunting bow properly. And then the third thing is shot placement.
Okay. It's really a picture of a wild boar or a fallow deer, roe deer, whatever. But there is no lines. There's no straight target.
We
really want to look at that. You're going to shoot within the lethal area of that animal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you don't see it. So you really have to understand anatomics that you're going to put your shot placement in the right way. That's what we want to see.
Like it is in the hunting situation.
Correct.
You know?
There are no dots on the animals.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, maybe a fellow.
the problem there, Ollie, is you have to hit the right spot.
I've got a question as an add-on. How do you ensure that the people take care of their exercises? You've been talking about month of working out with the bow itself. So is there a one-on-one training, or is there kind of a trainer who is dedicated for that one? Does the becoming bow hunter needs to get his or her own expertise? How do you ensure that?
I mean, in the end, it comes down to the person that they care about their equipment and they're going to train. It's not simple, to be honest, to find a good trainer in bow hunting, specifically like in countries where it's not yet integrated.
Mm.
Because there's maybe a couple hundred or a few thousand, but it's not so easy to find them. So I think the clubs can provide a network.
Mm-hmm.
And through that network, you start to learn. But the same was for us as well. When I started in 2010, there wasn't such things as YouTube and good videos, and you could listen to that. No, you had to really start and train, and it was lots of failure and try and error.
Is it lots of learning by doing, kind of?
Yes. Okay. Yes. But then, meanwhile, I can point new people to experts. We have some shops now, and I say, go to that person, they will teach you. So we get there.
So luckily, if we want to become bow hunters, we know you now. So,
and you know, that's a good
expertise.
And you know, that's a good start. That's a good start. And now we're really trying to build up networks. We have like groups in Germany now where you can sign up yourself and you can start help to teach people. So you find like a mentor.
Mm.
Cool.
Yeah, and the other aspect of this is that if you own a small property, you can usually shoot behind the house, you know.
I think this is...
If you have 10, 20 meters, you can go out and it's very quiet.
Yeah.
It doesn't disturb anyone. You get a big, big size target, you know, and you can just go out and shoot. And another thing that I have seen... Over the years, I have my kids. I mentioned those were mentioned,
mm-hmm.
and any type of shooting actually provides better accuracy with other tools. Mm. So if I shoot bow a lot, the technical side is slightly different, but the mental side is exactly the same, you know. You have to aim, you have to keep the target in focus, and you have to execute the shot. And what took me probably 40 years to understand is that I've had military training, I had some police officers training me and all that. Do the same.
Yeah.
And it's going to hit. The bow is not the culprit.
Practice.
It's the grounding. Yes, that's usually the weak part.
There's another part. I agree completely with Anders. Take my bow outside and shoot, or I'm in my hunting hut and I have a life-size target and I can practice. So you know, no noise, no big background problems. If you have a bit of a wall behind it, you can really shoot and train yourselves. There's something else as well. You probably have heard about those 3D courses.
Yeah. Mm.
So where you have those life-size 3D animals, and they're like a track of a couple of kilometers, 30 stations, and you can train there.
Yeah.
And the good thing is you can start, and I agree with Anders here, with kids. As soon as they can hold a bow and shoot a bow, you start training. And you talk with them about shot placement in different angles, from top down, from below up. And you start naturally get them engaged in an easy way, no stress, good fun. And we can really have good education and lure them in. I mean, this is important. Otherwise, you need to wait to 14 or 16 or 18. Lots of other interests can kick in.
So you just mentioned that if you do it outside, there's not that background risk like with the gun and so on. That brings me to a question more from a practical perspective, I would say. So what's the benefit of bow hunting, especially in cities? And are there countries where bow hunting in highly populated areas is a common practice? That at least would be an idea that comes to my mind.
One second, I'm going to call a friend in Madrid.
Okay.
He has an extensive experience.
Very good.
In Spain, they have used this for, is it 15 years or close to 20 years?
Yeah.
I think in Madrid they have harvested somewhere around 600 animals.
Okay.
What Javier is pointing at, it's not the harvest that is the important thing, it's the scare effect.
Yeah.
So the fright effect on the wild boar. But you cannot only go in and frighten them.
Mm.
Clear.
Because someone has to disappear once in a while, so that it kind of enforces this scare effect.
Yeah. Mm.
But they have been very, very successful there. And I think it's 13 or 15 cities, that larger cities that do it, urban and peri-urban. Then you have North America, you know, Twin Cities up in Minnesota. They have done a lot of this. For white-tailed deer there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Of course, in Spain, it's mostly wild boar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But we have it in France as well. There's an example where they look at muskrats. That's another one of those issues within city limits where they have big devastation on smaller creeks, which eventually go wide. And in that one area, they had like the cables, the power cables coming out, and it was really a big damage, a couple of $1 million. On that, and then they were going after it with the bows. And what was interesting, there was a scheme for some days where this was tried, and actually police was guarding it because you need to do it at daytime.
Yeah.
So there was people walking by, and people actually got engaged, and they were like absolutely fine with that. So this is also an interesting part in that people see it.
Yeah,
it's easier for people to accept, specifically in cities. It's, you know, you are very close to people.
Yeah.
It's not straightforward hunting.
You know.
But I think we can offer something there where we get an easier acceptance to do a role where you can manage within those areas.
Thinking about the wild boar problems in big cities in Germany, for like Berlin, for example.
Yeah, you know, hasn't there been this discussion?
You know, that would make sense.
But hasn't there been this discussion in Berlin to get rid of the wild boar population?
In the south of Berlin.
Yeah. See, I do remember. Sometimes. But talking about species, so which species are best suited for bow hunting, Anders?
All?
All.
I'm inclusive.
Okay.
Everything is possible.
Birds, geese, whatever.
it's about the hunting technique, really. How do you approach them and how can you get close to them? I mean, an average bow shot is 20 meters.
Okay. Mm. Isn't that scary, Oli, to get that close to wild animals?
No, if I would call it scary, when I started with it, I wasn't sure if I can make it.
Yeah, that close.
That close. But I know it works because I still do it. And it really works. And I just come back from a hunt really from in the wilderness, in the mountains on wild boar. And we were walking in on 10, 15 meters on those wild boars. And then you can send a shot and it works. So you do it. And I think that's one of the intriguing things to me. I need to think a bit more to get close and be more patient. Mm. And maybe we talk a lot about frustration tolerance as well when you do it. So it doesn't mean it always works, but it works.
And you're right. And I think also that it's a lot of hunting with bow and arrow.
Okay.
I mean, I hunt with rifles and shotguns and dogs and traps and everything. Mm. But it is a lot of hunting. And I think I just love the hunt. That's the only way I can describe it.
That holiday, I can tell that we were in Tajikistan on wild boar. Mm-hmm. And that's very mountainous. We were six of us. Mm. And only two of us in the end were successful shooting. We only met after like 1 week of hunting because it was always groups of two. We all had smiling faces because we all hunted.
Yeah, clear.
We all hunted. And that's what it is about. You know, it's they all had chances. They probably drew the bow. Mm. It wasn't quite right.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Is it like a relief when you shot a deer or wild boar? Or is it like the hunt itself?
I'm coming back to my Eland.
Okay.
You know, this internal trophy ball.
Yeah.
It's all right.
It's all right.
You know, sometimes I remember these moments more than when I actually
to
shot something.
That close to an animal, to a wild animal, I guess not. It's very much people did that experience.
Well, you know, you can do that with a gun on wild boar as well. So
sure.
I mean... Yeah. Taking part in driven hunts always is always an experience. I got very close to some wild boars, to be honest.
Yeah. Speaking about the equipment, so how intense is this to keep your stuff up and running compared to a normal hunting gear?
It's more intense.
What does that mean?
I think the first thing probably is your gear is pretty individual.
Okay.
Because your body is unique in dimensions. And your bow is built for your draw length, for your size, for everything. So not every bow is the same. It's probably the same model, but in the end, it's made for you with all your dimensions you have. So that's where it starts, and you need to maintain that. And then you still need to also learn about your equipment, what arrows you choose, why you choose them, where you go hunting, and so on. So you need to keep that.
Yeah.
And then what you also do as a bow hunter all the time is really you train. And it doesn't mean I train 2 hours a day. You need to lift yourself up to a certain level and then you keep a maintenance mode. And my mode, for instance, is I have a little badger, 3D animal, on the bottom of my balcony, 14 meters away. Mm-hmm. At lunchtime, 5 shots. That's enough. 5 arrows.
Yeah.
5 arrows, calm myself down, shoot them. That's plenty of training because I keep my routine.
Yeah.
So that's a few minutes. Is it intensive? Some say yes. I have my 5 minutes at lunch.
Maybe I'm in disagreement with Oli here. I think my stuff, I set it once and I don't touch it.
Okay.
Unless something is going weird. But it's like my rifle, basically.
Yeah.
And then I have a similar situation like you do for my... practicing before hunting. I have my roe deer target. I'm going to Denmark, roe deer hunting, roebuck hunting. Mm-hmm. So I put up my roe deer target and I shoot 1 arrow and I leave the bow out in the garden. And then I go away, you know, and fiddle with my internet or whatever. And then an hour later, I walk by this strange bow laying there in the garden again. So I fling an arrow and second arrow there.
Yeah.
Because in a hunting situation, there is only 1 shot.
Yeah.
First shot counts.
Yeah.
And it's independent of rifle or shotgun or bow. We shoot to kill.
Yeah. And as we are talking about one shot, is that the kind of unique challenge bow hunters have to face? How does the EBF kind of ensure that these challenges, that bow hunters overcome those challenges?
I don't think I understand the question, but it's a personal thing, of course.
Okay.
Isn't it? That the person actually is responsible for his doings. But we discuss these things, you know.
Yeah.
And then one shot, you take the opportunity when it's there. And it's your judgment, actually, that will decide when you shoot. If you're accurate at 20 meters or 30 meters, it depends on the hunter. Just like in a rifle situation, some people are 80-meter shots and some are 180-meter shots. Yeah. And of course, it depends on the situation. If we stretch this, you know, I have my 15-meter days with the bow and I have my 25-meter days with the bow. As I have with the rifle, I have my 100-meter days and I have my 300-meter days.
Mm. Yeah, but are there challenges bow hunters need to overcome those things? Like, is this the one shot to be mental and prepared, physical prepared for that one shot? Is that the challenge of bow hunting?
I think I struggle with challenge, but what I had to learn is immerse myself a bit more into the animal.
Mm.
And understand maybe what it's going to do and then find out what's a good shot, when it's a good shot to do it. For instance, you shouldn't shoot when the animal has the head down.
Mm.
When the head up is better. It's counterintuitive.
Yeah.
But when you look at videos and you see how animals behave during the shot or after shot, it's better like that. So you learn all that. So I'm now observing how an animal approaches me. Is it wary? I won't shoot.
Mm.
I need to see, is it now coming down? Oh, yes, it's coming down. Oh, now is my window where I can probably take a shot.
Mm.
And that's different with a rifle. Yeah. So that's what I had to learn. This is probably my biggest learning with that. Beside all the distance and everything, it is about that understanding the animal.
And that's also part of the intriguing part in this, I think, is that to understand your animal. Yeah. I have a interesting story. I was going to Greenland, muskox hunting.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly the wife got the question, shouldn't we all go to the zoo with the kids? I think I spent 4 hours at the muskox pen to understand how they behave and how they move and all that. And they went and looked at the dolphins and the cheetahs and whatever it was. So, and I took some photos and so on. But when you travel as well, you know, it's an adventure. You actually travel to experience other things as well, you know. And another thing that with getting so close to animals is that you can actually smell them, you know.
Yeah.
You start to use all your senses.
Yeah.
And that is something I find extremely fascinating. You are embedded in nature. Yeah. I used that word once and I can't remember where this was, but we were... Yeah, it's a good word, embedded in nature. It's a lot of hunting, like I mentioned before.
Yes, I think it's kind of comparable to hunting at night on wild boar, if you look for them and then... And
very close.
And, yeah, closer and closer and closer. So, same thing, yeah.
You know, it's you can't be stressed.
Yeah.
You know, you need to go slow.
Yeah.
And when you go slow, you should go slower. I mean, this is what it is. You know,
The fastest way is the slowest.
The slower you go, the more is your chances because you observe, you see, and then you get to your 15 or 20 meters.
So, looking into the future, what developments and trends do you see future of bow hunting? So, particularly in training, equipment, public perception, and so on.
You had a whole shotgun pattern of questions there. Training-wise, I think we are well ahead of the normal hunting groups, mm-hmm. you know, in the sense that we shoot at animal targets a lot. And that makes shot placement is much easier when you actually do that. Because there, as I mentioned, and Ollie commented on the dots on the fallow deer, but there are no dots in the woods. So... that is one huge advantage with bow and arrow, that we do practice on these life-size animal targets. advancement. I mean, there are so many technical stuff coming today, you know, with the integrated laser range finders,
yeah.
And there are night vision and thermal vision and so on. I'm not sure, you know. I enjoy the hunt, you know, and it's not the kill.
Yeah.
I think, Anders, in bow hunting, it's interesting, specifically when we talk on a European level.
Yeah.
There are some countries like the French countries, they use a lot their traditional bows on driven hunts.
Mm-hmm.
So talking about advancements, there's no advancement. You know, they're still stick bows.
Yeah.
They're still made out of wood, maybe some modern materials.
Yeah.
But still, we're talking about a wooden arrow or, you know, it's still a regular bow, how you know it from Robin Hood.
Yeah.
It doesn't look so much different. So there is both elements. There is this advancement about some technical things like these laser range finders, which give you a hollow dot on your visor, and it's great. On the other side, there's still a big group who will hunt with those traditional bows, and they even cut themselves further down in distance.
Yeah.
If they go on those driven hunts, their distance is 10 meters. And they do this deliberately because it's about the hunt there. So actually, it's not always about going faster, further, better.
Yeah.
It's about preserving that and enjoying that in there.
Yeah. What about the public perception of bow hunting in future?
Ooh.
No, I'm not afraid.
No, I'm not afraid either.
No, that when we talk to our Danish colleagues that have been hunting with bow and arrow since 1967, actually the Danish Hunting Association, when they have any trouble with the perception of hunting, they threw the bow hunters out and everything calms down.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you're in doubt, you know, about hunting and especially when we discuss killing, which some people kind of sets the same, hunters are killers, but I think hunting is hunting. And then occasionally we harvest something.
Hmm.
And the perception with bow and arrow, I know that quite a lot of non-hunters that do not have any personal experience in that, mm-hmm. they think it's a fair way of hunting. They think it's fair, you know. Yeah. The animal has some possibilities to escape, which they do also have with rifle.
Clear.
Or shotgun. But some guys think it's fair. And I also think, and this is of course stretching it, but the anti-hunting movement is terrified of bow hunting. There is a group, you know, that they pick mushrooms, they pick their firewood, they pick their berries in the wood. And they could easily, you know, go to bow and arrow and harvest their deer or wild boar because it doesn't make noise and it's not, the perception is not of heavy arms or a heavy weapon, you know, that actually scares some people today. Mm. So that's a thought for you guys.
Yeah. We'll think about that.
Yes. Is the head aching?
Yeah.
I do have one last question. If you do have the chance to leave a take-home message for all the listeners outside, what would that be about bow hunting, according to the EBF?
I think keep an open mind to things. Soak it up. Try to set yourself in those boots instead of prejudging things.
Mm.
Today, they are very quick at judging different aspects of society and life without having the knowledge.
Yeah, because they are not used to it.
Not used to it or not exposed to it or don't want to. They're just negative, you know.
Yeah.
So that's my message.
That's your take-home message. Ollie, how about you?
First, I can echo Anders completely.
Oh.
It's the echo but chamber.
It's my echo chamber. We're here at the Jagd und Hund.
Yes.
Yeah. And we can definitely here make an offer. Please come into Hall 2. We have a large booth there. We have some shooting lanes where you can actually get a bow in your hand. It's set up and designed in a way that even somebody who has not exercised it before can try it and have a first experience. And it's exactly what Anders say. This is always what we find when people have a bow in their hand. And the chief, actually a nice group of an arrow into those 3D animals. they find out that is possible, even without much training, when you get the right trainer aside you and helps you there. So if you see that, if you experience it, it helps a lot. And I think this is keeping that open mind. So take the opportunity, come to the show.
Yeah, at any fair, right?
We are in 4 fairs in Germany, yes. So whenever we are, please show up. We have a great team. People are really open to explain and answer questions.
Use the opportunity. I already experienced that.
So, but I think Vicky and myself, we will show up.
I already did. Yeah, you know that I did that last year.
Yeah, yeah. We'll do.
But it hasn't to be the last one.
Well, then thanks to our listeners for tuning in. We hope this was an interesting discussion on our first international episode here and brought a valuable insight into bow hunting from our side.
It has truly been a pleasure, to be honest.
Yes.
And thank both of you for being our guests for today. I do have lots of questions, more questions, but I guess we're going to do that later on.
We'll do.
We'll do. So thank you again, Anders and Oli, for taking part in our first special in English.
Yes.
Carsten. And of course, what do we say? Normally we say, weit mein Seil.
Who?
I think we need to think about another.
Yeah, we have to translate that.
Goodbye. But thanks again for listening and tuning in, and have a good day.
Thank you very much for letting us be here.
Pleasure. Thank you very much as well.
Okay, bye.
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 Bye-bye.